You are listening to the Forgotten News Podcast.
But before we begin, here are a few words about a couple of other podcasts that we think you might want to try.
Do you like creepy stories?
True crime?
Cults?
Dogs?
Wait, that has nothing to do with it.
Well, then you should listen to Undercover Coven.
I'm Paula.
I'm Ali.
And Undercover Coven is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher,
and anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Come join us.
Bye.
Do unsolved mysteries keep you up at night?
Do you spend hours searching for that one clue that everyone else has missed?
Do you have pet true crime cases that you keep coming back to and you desperately want to see solved?
So do we.
I'm Allie, a graphic designer who loves mysteries.
And I'm Kat, a forensic anthropology student.
And we're the hosts of DOE, a podcast dedicated to DOE cases from around the world.
Each episode, we discuss two cases of deceased individuals whose identities are unknown, and one case where their identity is now known, but the circumstances surrounding their death might still remain a mystery.
Find us at doe.simplecast.com or listen wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome to Strange But Forgotten, a mini episode of the Forgotten News Podcast. These shorter episodes feature stories that aren't really a good fit for a full-length episode of the podcast. But just like the regular episodes, these will always be true stories that were randomly found in old newspapers. Stories that haven't seen the light of day in decades, or even a century or more. So for a little while, just relax and let this podcast be your time machine to long before you were born.
And now, here's your hosts.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year. And thank you for listening. My name is Jim.
My name's Aaron Fleming. And you are listening to a mini episode of the Forgotten News Podcast. You might possibly know me from my show, Red Rum Blonde. And on this episode, I will be the substitute co-host filling in for Kit Karen, who's having some unexpected issues with her schedule and some other personal things, and, well, you know, they're eating up a little too much of her time right now to be able to participate today. Long story short, Jim and I have known each other as podcasters for a long time, and I've recorded some things for him a few times in the past. You might have heard me before. So he contacted me, and he asked me if I'd be willing to be his guest co-host for this mini-episode. Basically, he thought I would be a good fit since the featured story is a true crime story, and my show is a true crime podcast. Anyway, I thought it over. It took me about 5 seconds before I told him I would be absolutely willing, so here I am.
Okay. Thank you, Aaron. Now, as Aaron mentioned, this will be a mini episode because
a featured story
will be shorter than a regular full-length episode. And now that you know all that, let's move on. We will begin with a short warning.
Listeners, our featured story takes place in 1885 in the state of Ohio. You will hear about an outlaw who was lynched by an angry mob and his violent and vicious crimes, including the death of a child, which led up to the lynching. We will be presenting the story in precisely the way that it was reported in the newspapers at the time. And so, do not expect to be hearing a lot of gruesome or gory details. Instead, you will be hearing the story in just the way that the public learned about it 135 years ago.
However, even so, if you think that hearing about these things could possibly cause you to have a negative emotional reaction, then this episode might not be something you should listen to.
In addition, the story that is being featured is definitely not recommended for children, since it could be upsetting or even frightening to young ears.
Parental discretion is strongly advised.
Now, before we move on, I'm going to mention a statistic. The lynching in the story was one of 22 that occurred at various times and places during the history of the state of Ohio.
And although it is common to think of lynchings as something that is associated with the American South and the unlawful hanging of black men, the man at the center of this lynching story was a white man in a northern state.
By the way, this particular story takes place in the town of New Straitsville in Perry County. It's a community of approximately 3,000 people at the time, which is located approximately 63 miles or 101 kilometers southeast of Columbus.
And with all that having been said,
on with the show. Listeners, a few moments ago, I mentioned a statistic. Well, the world is full of statistics, and statistics are often measured in time. For example, in the United States, a baby girl is born every 8 seconds, and every 12 seconds, there is a death. Professional gamblers will tell you that if you stood at a roulette table in Las Vegas with unlimited funds for 50 years, the odds would still be 36 to 1 against winning. But if Albert Guest were alive today, he would tell you the odds are stacked the most strongly against you when you decide to break the commandment, thou shalt not kill. And now, listeners, on that note, we will begin with the very first mention of the name Albert Guest in any newspaper anywhere. It was published in the Columbus Dispatch, and here it is.
Friday, May 22nd, 1885. The headline reads simply, "The Valley Tragedy." New Straitsville, Ohio. This community, yesterday and last night, was the scene of a double murder and the hanging of the murderer by an angry mob. The murderer upon whom the mob vented its wrath last night was Albert Guest, a former convict from the state penitentiary. His victims were Town Marshal Henry Auer and Hugh McTagg, a boy aged 12. The trouble arose from a visit by Guest and night watchman William Tandy to the house of William Wallace on Wednesday night, where they deported themselves in a very unseemly manner, demanding admission and finally threatening to break down the door unless it were opened. After gaining admission, they, it is charged, committed rape upon the person of Miss Anderson, and, after gratifying their unholy desires, left the house about 4 o'clock next morning. As they departed, they fired several shots at the house, some of them narrowly missing the residents. Early yesterday morning, a warrant was sworn out for the arrest of Guest and Tandy on the charge of rape, and was placed in the hands of Marshal Auer for execution. Tandy surrendered himself and was bound over to the Common Pleas Court in the sum of $1,000. Guest, who had boasted that no officer would ever arrest him again, was confronted by the marshal in front of the United States Hotel. Guest refused to go with him, and, before the officer was hardly aware of the serious character of his task, guest had drawn a .45 caliber self-cocking revolver and shot him. He fired 3 shots into Marshall Auer in rapid succession, and then fired 2 at random into a crowd which had collected about the spot. One of the bullets ripped into the stomach of Hugh McTagg, a boy standing nearby. All 3 of the shots fired at Marshall Auer took effect. 1 in the thigh, 1 in the abdomen, and another in the neck. Auer shot once at Guest, but it did not take effect. Throwing away his revolver after his murderous work, Guest dashed away toward the Plummer Hill mine. By this time, the whole town was in an uproar, and hundreds of men, women, and children were crowding and inquiring what had happened and who had done it. Auer and McTagg were picked up and cared for by friendly hands. Physicians examined the wounds and pronounced them fatal in the case of each of the victims. As the affair came to be fully understood, the town was filled with anger and excitement, and in a very short time after the shooting, a lot of determined men set out to capture the murderer. He was found and taken into custody in the woods near the Plummer Hill mine. Guest stood at bay with his hand on his pistol and prepared to shoot. A burly German shouted, "Throw up your hands," pointing a Winchester rifle at him. Guest threw up one hand, and the German shouted, "Throw up both hands this minute," as his fingers played with the trigger of his gun. Guest responded, "Give yourself up, damn you. Throw up both hands, because I'm going to shoot you through the heart if you don't." Recognizing the futility of further resistance, Guest gave himself up. The general mood was to lynch him, then and there, but wiser heads prevailed, and he was taken to jail and locked up. As the afternoon advanced, the excitement increased, and lynching was freely talked of. Men gathered in little crowds and talked excitedly. It was evident that another scene was about to be added to the tragedy. Mayor Spurrier answered no to offers by the nearby communities of Logan and New Lexington, asking if help was wanted to maintain order. He probably felt the influence that was agitating the people, and felt that, if they had determined upon vengeance, it would be worse than useless to oppose them. About 10 o'clock at night, 200 masked men appeared at the jail. They broke into the building, pointed their revolvers to the heads of the officers in charge, and demanded the keys to the cell. They got them. The cell which Guest occupied was unlocked, and despite his vigorous resistance, he was dragged out and taken to near the place where he had been captured in the afternoon. Others joined the band of determined men as they left the jail. Then, by the time that the place of execution was reached, the crowd had swelled to twice its size. The masked men sought to do their work quietly and without the knowledge of the village, but they failed. Guest was strung up while calling out the names of the men who he thought were killing him. Afterward, once he was suspended by the neck, the crowd stepped back and many of them, drawing revolvers, fired into the body of the doomed man. The body was riddled with bullets, and it is doubtful whether the noose or the bullets were the cause of his death.
One day after that article was published, the Columbus Dispatch printed this follow-up story.
Saturday, May 23rd, 1885. The headline reads, "Marshall Auer Dead. The wounds inflicted by Albert Guest prove fatal today." New Straitsville, Ohio. Henry Auer, late Marshal of New Straitsville, who was shot by Albert Guest, the man lynched on the night of the 21st, died this morning at 6:35. The body will be taken to Shawnee for burial tomorrow. There is no feeling of regret at the lynching of Guest, the general sentiment being that he deserved his cruel fate. Whether any of the mob will be punished is a matter for the future to determine. Prosecutor James E. Johnston and Sheriff P. M. Brunner came here last night to look into the case, and their action is looked forward to with a great deal of interest. The body of Guest was cut down yesterday morning at 7:30 o'clock by Coroner Stebbs. A crowd of 200 or more was already at the scene of the lynching when the coroner arrived, gazing upon the fearful sight. The head nearly touched the limb to which the rope was tied. The eyes seemed starting from their sockets, and the tongue protruded. His coat, which had been removed, was hung over one shoulder. Blood saturated the clothing that he wore and the grass below the corpse. The body, when cut down, was taken to Guest's house, and a post-mortem was held by Doctors Newton and Allen. 10 bullet holes were found in his body. The following is the concluding sentence of the report. Quote, "The conclusion at which we arrive is that said Albert Guest came to his death by strangulation, the bullet wounds being inflicted, probably, before the heart ceased to beat." Unquote.
On the same day, in addition to that story, the Columbus Dispatch also printed a separate article, which gave the life history of the outlaw, Albert Guest.
May 23rd, 1885. The headline reads, "The Career of Albert Guest." Carbon Hill, Ohio. Albert Guest was born of respectable and well-to-do parents who resided on a farm some 3 miles from Carbon Hill. An iron ore company offered to buy the property. They accepted the offer, and they then moved to a farm near Delaware, Ohio, where they now live. During his boyhood days, Guest was of a quiet and rather reserved disposition, and nothing was then noticeable in his conduct that would indicate the character into which he soon developed. The beginning of his downward career can be correctly dated from an incident that occurred in a hotel in Logan, Ohio, some 12 years ago. Albert had gone to attend the agricultural fair, accompanied by 2 young women of questionable character. He engaged a room at the Bunce House. During the event, 4 notorious local characters entered the room to capture the females. They began by assaulting Guest, who, seeing himself cornered, opened his pocket knife and began carving the men. The 4 intruders sought safety in flight. He was arrested for his offense and was honorably acquitted by the Common Pleas Court. This act seems to have ruined him. He was at once looked upon as a bully and was more or less courted by the worst element in his neighborhood. He began to drink to excess, and while on one of his sprees, about 7 years ago, in company with another young man of his age at Gore, the 2 fell in with a young miner from Kentucky who had come to Gore on a visit. The 3 caroused together during the evening, and the next morning the body of the young miner was dragged on the cowcatcher of a locomotive from Gore to New Straitsville, for which Guest and his companion were arrested. The watch which belonged to the dead man was found in possession of Guest, and he was convicted of robbery and sentenced to serve 7 years at the Ohio Penitentiary. Guest's companion was cleared and soon moved out west, where he has since died, but not without making a confession in which he stated that himself and Albert Guest held the Kentuckian's head underwater until he strangled, when they relieved him of his money and watch, and then placed him on the railroad track, where he was struck. Guest served 3 years of his sentence and was pardoned by Governor Foster during his second term on the condition that he abstain from the use of intoxicating beverages. The petition asking for the pardon was signed by many of the prominent citizens of Logan. The condition of the pardon was never fulfilled by Guest. It was not long until his sober hours were but few. Society loses nothing by his death, while his wife and children, parents and relatives, of whom he has a large number, are to be pitied in their affliction. Guest was brought up a farmer, but during the past 2 years he has lived and worked at some coal mine at New Straitsville. Marshall Auer, who died this morning, will be buried by the Odd Fellows Lodge of New Straitsville tomorrow. Invitations have been sent to the various lodges in the valley, and a large number have signified their willingness to attend. Arrangements are being made for special trains to New Straitsville by those who well attend in a body. He will be buried at Shawnee. Albert Guest was buried this morning. The boy, McTagg, shot by Guest at New Straitsville, died at 1 o'clock.
Now, I will mention, just as an aside, that these articles from the Columbus Dispatch were reprinted in newspapers all across Ohio, as well as in cities and towns across the United States, because the Dispatch just happened to have a reporter who was on the scene. And it appears that no other newspaper had that luck. But not to be outdone, the Cleveland Plain Dealer tracked down a member of the lynch mob and published his description of the event.
May 26, 1885. The headline reads, Dragged to His Death. A leader of the New Straitsville lynchers tells how Albert Guest died. New Straitsville, Ohio. The body of Hugh McTagg, the boy victim of the murderer Albert Guest, was quietly buried here yesterday afternoon. Mayor Spurrier emphatically denies the published statement that the communities of Logan and now Lexington offered him assistance to maintain order, but that he declined it. The mayor says he received a telegram asking if he needed troops or something like that, and he was answered in the negative. A leader of the lynching party says that the rope, which had been taken from a fire engine, was adjusted around Guest's neck at the foot of Plummer Hill. Guest was ordered to move on up the steep hill, but he refused, with a vulgar oath, and so he had to be was dragged by the rope to the spot where he was hanged. Guest may actually have died while he was being dragged, at a distance of about 150 yards. The tree to which Guest was then hanged is a chestnut, which shows symptoms of decay. Many of its limbs are dead. It stands in full view of the town, and the houses in which the murderer and his victims resided. The limb from which he was hung is diminishing in size. The bark is being peeled off, and, if the pruning process continues, it will not be long until the tree will be no more. The hill on which this tree now stands used to be known as the Old Bank Hill. This name was changed by Isaac Rock to Lynching Ridge the morning following the lynching, and it is now called by that name.
Listeners, that article seems to have been the very last mention of Albert Guest or anything connected to his crimes or the lynching in any newspaper anywhere. So, with that having been said, we are now at the end of the story.
Well, that was a pretty wild story.
Yeah.
And as far as lynchings in Ohio, this is the 13th lynching story that this podcast has covered.
So there are 9 more to go until all the stories will be told.
Yes. But for right now, I am going to mention a quote from President Abraham Lincoln on the subject of lynching. And as far as I know, it was his only comment on the topic. He said that lynchings generally occur, quote, in cases that are too strong for the courts, unquote. And personally, I will say that, in my opinion, this particular incident was one of those cases, because the fact is, in a lot of small towns in the 19th century, the general public simply didn't trust the court system to give criminals the punishment that they deserved. However, Aaron, before I say anything else, do you have any thoughts or comments?
And with that being the case, I wonder if the people of New Straitsville just wanted to make sure that Albert Guest was gone for good, and that there would be no chance that he would ever come back and rampage through their town ever again. It really reminds you of a more modern-day case of, I think his name was Ken McElroy in Missouri. This guy kind of just terrorized this town, raping, committing crimes, just, you know, bullying the whole town. And what happened was a group of citizens got together and shot him and kept it all to themselves, did not reveal who actually shot him. So it really reminds you of that kind of, you know, home-style justice. You know, I mean, from that standpoint, this town here was dealing with a man who was totally depraved and who didn't seem to care what he did or who he hurt.
Yes. Yes. That incident in Missouri is a perfect example of the type of thing that Abraham Lincoln was talking about when he said that lynching tends to happen in cases that are too strong for the courts. Now, just to be clear, at this point in time, he was not talking about the type of anti-black lynching that frequently happened in the American South during the 19th and early 20th century. Lincoln was talking about situations involving killers, rapists, and similar outlaws who had repeatedly managed to evade the legal system in one way or another. So, the people of the community would eventually get fed up and take the law into their own hands. And, by the way, that incident in Missouri might be considered a lynching, because under American law, a lynching does not need to be a hanging. A lynching is defined as any time that a person is killed by a group of people without legal authority. But since only one person pulled the trigger, it might technically not have been a lynching, even though a large number of people seem to have had advanced knowledge. But getting back to 1885 and the case of Albert Guest, no matter how you look at it, it was a terrible situation, and Albert Guest was a terrible person. Now, jumping ahead to the present day, I think this would be a good time to thank the person who narrated the news articles from the Columbus Dispatch and the Cleveland Plain Dealer that told the story of Albert Guest. His name is Sean Leonard. He is a professional voice artist, and we would like you to know all about his services.
Sean Lenhart is a Pittsburgh-based actor, voice actor, opera singer, all kinds of things. Sean has narrated over 50 books available on Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Sean has voiced multiple characters on different animations on YouTube and also on podcasts. You can see what he's up to on Twitter at Sean Lenhart or at his website, www.seanlenhart.com.
And now, once again, we would like to thank Sean for all of his hard work. And moving right along, since this is a mini episode, there will not be a police blotter and court news segment or a recommendation segment.
Well, Jim, I do have one recommendation anyway. Listeners, as soon as you have a free minute, go to iTunes, also known as Apple Podcasts, and rate, review, and subscribe to the Forgotten News Podcast. And, you know, preferably leave a 5-star review. I know I have.
Thank you, Aaron. And listeners, if you have any opinions about anything on this mini episode or any previous episode, just send an email to forgottennewspodcast@gmail.com. You can also make comments or give input on Facebook or Twitter. Now, having said that, I would truly appreciate if Aaron, my co-host on this mini episode, would please take a few moments and tell the listeners all about her podcast. So, take it away, Aaron.
Hello, I'm Aaron Fleming, host of the true crime podcast Writer on Blonde. Each week I pick a different true crime case to explore. Some famous ones and then not so famous. It's a variety of solved and unsolved, but the details are always consistently dark and disturbing. Writer on Blonde is available on SoundCloud, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts from. I also have a Writer on Blonde Facebook page. I'm on Twitter at BlondeRedRum and Instagram. So join me each week to look at the darker side of life.
And that brings us to the end of this mini episode.
So, goodbye everyone, and thanks a lot for listening.
Happy New Year, and see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Strange But Forgotten, a mini episode of the Forgotten News Podcast. You will now be exiting this time machine, but please be sure to come back again to enjoy another visit to the past.
It is easy to remember the times when humanity has been wise and great. But it is more important to remember the many special ways in which it has been evil, cruel, and vicious.
I'm passing through, just passing through. Sometimes happy, sometimes blue. Glad that I ran into you. Tell the people that you saw me passing through.